Hello, and welcome to the Watermill Theatre podcast. I'm Danielle Pearson, and I'm the playwright in residence here at the Watermill. Today, we're going to be talking about our new touring production of Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre, which I've adapted for three actors. I sat down with our podcast producer, Imogen Greenberg, and the director and cast of the show to talk about reimagining this iconic novel. So I think adapting Jane Eyre obviously is a huge challenge and a really epic task, especially when you've got 70 minutes and three actors for a kind of massive, massive novel. But in some ways, limitations can be your best friend in these situations because they set clear parameters, which you just know you're going to have to make it work. I come to Jane Eyre as a massive fan of the book and of the Brontes and of many of the novels of this period. I think so many of them speak to really modern anxieties about the role of women in society, about class, gender, the British Empire and colonialism. And I feel like we're very used to updating Shakespeare and adapting Shakespeare and using those slightly earlier works and really just trusting that they're robust enough that you can make very clear parallels and kind of play with them formally and that they still stand the test of time. And maybe we're just starting to look at the 18th and 19th centuries through the same prism with shows like Hamilton or Sylvia. We're starting to think, actually, you could tell a really modern political story that hits with the force that a book like Jane Eyre would have hit the 19th century and speaks to modern politics today while still honouring the extraordinary work that was being made in that period. With a book like Jane Eyre, when you know you're doing a school's tour, you could choose to, for example, modernise the language or try and set it in the modern day or something. But I was quite interested to say, what if we kept it in the 19th century, kept so much of Charlotte Bronte's amazing dialogue and description, but really focused on the political side of things? And the kind of pressing question for me about Jane Eyre is the role of Bertha. She's Rochester's first wife, who is locked in the attic and functions in Bronte's novel as this kind of gothic device and a set piece. She's grotesque and mad and described as Creole. And so there's all sorts of stuff going on there about mental health and the role of her ethnicity in assumptions about her madness. And it seemed to really speak to intersectional feminism as we understand it today, because Jane is this exciting, rebellious heroine who makes all sorts of exciting choices that kind of speak to modern feminism. But what does that matter to us now if the Creole woman in the story just gets left behind and we have no empathy for her? I didn't want to tell that story. And I think even in many modern adaptations of Jane Eyre, you see that Bertha gets sidelined because we're focusing on it as a romance between Jane and Rochester. And we think about the ways in which Jane is a really contemporary feminist character, but Bertha gets left behind.
Though I am poor, plain, obscure, and little.
I am no bird, and no net ensnares me.
It's you, you rare, unearthly thing.
Master?
How is he my master?
How is he my master?
If he struck me with that rod, I would get it from his hand and break it under his nose.
Were it put free?
It was sure cloud high.
I'm Chloe, and I'm the director. With Bertha, there's such a lot of information missing. All that Charlotte Bronte says about her is that she's a Creole woman. And at that point, that meant really anyone from any countries where a person or people lived who were from both European and African descent. And there was such a lot about what Creole was in 19th century Britain that was super stereotyped that Charlotte Bronte kind of uses it as a shorthand way to say she's mad and grotesque. She's this horror figure in the Gothic horror sense. So making her a real person and putting in a real human journey for her and really therefore speaking to, in terms of now, yeah, Jane Eyre's a feminist story, but also it's a story about race. We cannot now in this world be feminist without talking about race, and actually not us doing the talking, but really listening. So that was a big conversation for us coming in, and really key in the forming of our theatrical version of it now was how to honour the romance, speak to the feminism, and include talking about structural racism.
My name is Riasha Walton, and I will be playing Bertha, Betsy, Blanche Ingram, Adele Varens, the Vicar, Diana Rivers, Mrs. Fairfax, Helen Burns, Mrs. Reed. That's everyone. Yeah, the idea that Bronte brings of Bertha being this other, this Creole person, I wanted to bring dimensions to that rather than it just being a block, opaque, almost like a cardboard cutout of what that is supposed to be. I wanted to really give her life. I've had to do a lot of research to make a fictional idea become historically viable. The fact that this free woman of colour exists in England is very possible, but it took a lot of digging to find out how that could possibly even be the case. So I did a lot of looking at the slave trade, but also looking at Creole culture and how that came to be, and colonization, obviously, of the Caribbean and West Indian islands. I'm of Jamaican descent myself. My grandma and granddad were born in Jamaica. So a lot of speaking to my grandma as well and asking her experience of being a black woman, a woman that is descended from African ancestry, but also her experience of the different social layers of society in Jamaica that were unfortunately based on complexion, not just skin colour, also categorisation on complexion. What I also wanted to come forward was more that she is a human, that she is a woman, that she has real feelings and emotions, and that possibly her cultural ideals or behaviours are steeped in an otherness to Rochester, but actually a normality for her. The strong African identity that she would have had just based on her skin colour, but also the otherness being Creole, meaning that she's mixed heritage, and just where that placed her in her own society.
Oh, those gorgeous eyes, dark and glorious eyes, burn with passion eyes. How they hypnotize, how I adore you so, how I feel you though. Since I saw those dark eyes glow.
In trying to give Bertha more of a voice and a narrative arc in the play, I was interested in a kind of two-prong attack. In my version of the play, to begin with, in moments of trauma, Jane is confronted by this kind of vision of Bertha. And at the same time, there's this real Bertha who is just locked in Rochester's attic. And so this kind of mysterious figure that appears throughout the play is in some ways a kind of figment of Jane's imagination, or potentially Jane is a figment of Bertha's imagination. But then as we get through to the reveal of Bertha, Rochester's wife, in the attic, the two women kind of meet and are confronted with the ways in which their lives are parallel and the relationship between the two of them and the ways in which Bertha has been silenced. And so throughout the play, I sort of don't want the audience to be able to get too comfortable in this love story and forget about Bertha. And so she's a silenced person. So we're sort of expressing her silence through song and movement throughout the piece. And then we do give lines, which she doesn't have in the novel. And we leave that for you to kind of ponder as audience members.
We've been looking at different dance forms. And one of those that I managed to find was ballet. It is a African, Spanish-influenced dance from the Caribbean. And we found these kind of really rhythmic foot work and grounded moves that really helped bring Bertha's physical story to life and help to represent her when we're looking at maybe more abstract or dream sequences within our version of Jane Eyre. And they're the moments that we see relationship and communication between Jane and Bertha. So they may not speak directly in the narrative, but they have these moments of recognition. Either Bertha is demonstrating through this movement. It's almost like a ballroom meets bird-like parade with rhythmic, really heavy rhythmic footwork. So the best way that I can describe it. Kind of represents at times Jane's desire for freedom, for liberty, for independence, for this wildness that Bertha represents, free-spiritedness, but also her inner rage, her want to rebel, her angst and ideas about patriarchy and wanting to go against that. So there's so many times when Bertha represents something else. She has her own story, yes, but she may also tie in emotionally to what Jane is going through. And I think the movement is a really cool language for us to use, as opposed to always leaning on text, because we have to stay true to Jane Eyre. The adaptation is phenomenal and gives us space to explore the original text, but with all these other layers that I think bring more depth to all of the characters.
My name is Tim Knight, and I am the sound designer. We're trying to portray two different worlds. We've got the real world, the here and now, in the play, and then there's the ethereal, the mystical, the spiritual world that runs alongside it. And so all the sound effects are from the second, from the spiritual, the ethereal, the mystical. So through the piece, Bertha is represented by the beating of wings, and there is a parallel story told between Bertha and Jane herself. And so the dynamic and the story of Bertha starts from very early on, but actually comes through the sound world rather than the physical. Later on, we are introduced to Bertha in the flesh, but before she arrives in the flesh on stage, we start to experience her through the beating of wings.
My name is Rebecca Tebbutt, and I'm playing Jane. So the connection between Jane and Bertha in this version of the play is really interesting, because Bertha is, at times, although Bertha is very real and has a very real journey of her own, at times she's sort of conjured by Jane as a spirit and a representation of something that Jane maybe wants. It's weird, because the real Bertha is trapped in an attic, but Jane envies Bertha's freedom in her younger years when she appears in the play to her. It's like, who is this amazing, like, fierce woman who can just walk in and out of rooms and do whatever she likes? Like, I wish I could do that. Before I realise who she is in the play, and there's the turning point where we realise that Bertha is the woman that Rochester keeps in his attic, it's sort of this, I wish I could be you. And then she realises it's all been rubbish, nonsense.
So she kind of works on this symbolic level, but then I think it's quite a stark reality when you finally meet her in the attic. And there's this kind of disjunct between the character we have been seeing and Jane and Rochester's relationship and the stark reality of this woman who's been imprisoned. When Rochester is explaining his version of the story, we have Bertha kind of interjecting with her version of the story. And it's been really interesting trying to stage the idea that Rochester could both be sympathetic, funny, charismatic, a good match for Jane, and also incredibly problematic, misogynistic, racist, a man of his time, and what it does to their love story if Bertha is just a sane woman who is he has imprisoned. And I think the actors have been really struggling, but also really enjoying the challenge of trying to let all of these characters exist in their own terms without having to silence any of them.
No, not sad am I, or so mad am I. No, so sad am I, or so mad am I.
I think what's really interesting with Jane is she's always feels suffocated by social norms and what's expected of her. And I think in this day and age now, it seems like as women we're getting to a point where we desperately trying to break out of what's expected of us because it's not how we feel. And there's like in the book, it's incredible how articulate Charlotte Bronte is about that and how it fits with everything that's happening today. So that really quite famous paragraph where she's like, women feel as men do. Like, we can't just be expected to sit around and knit. And it's the same sort of thing now where we can't be expected to take everybody's crap, basically, and just be okay with it. So I think there's very interesting parallels that go way deeper than I can even articulate, I think.
I'm Alex Wilson. I am playing Rochester, St. John Rivers, Brocklehurst, John Reed, and the Coachman. I hadn't really thought about it, but Rochester in my mind was the same ilk as a Mr. Darcy, and it was kind of a, you know, it's just a bit of a grumpy northern lord who's kind of sexy and will just, like, you know, he'll be grumpy for a while, but in the end the girl will convince him that, you know, really love is the way forward. And yeah, and then you read the book and you're like, this guy's awful. Like, he's privileged and he's hateful and he marries a woman and then is resentful that she has mental illness in her family, and there's this whole element that her ethnicity was hidden from him in a sense, and that she comes from a different class and that he's only marrying her for her fortune anyway, and he's been forced into that, and, you know, he's horrible. And yeah, that's tricky. You've got to find a way through it, but the only way to love him is to build in a capacity for redemption for him. And, you know, I think also one of the complexities of doing something like this now, and I think we're finding that with a lot of new work and also our attitude towards celebrities who've done really bad things in the past, and is we're now at a point where, because we are rooting out the evil, we can't always be subtle about our views on people. We are necessarily at the point where if someone's done wrong, we have to label them as evil, because before they were allowed to get away with everything, so we have to hold them to the strictest judgment. And that is just at the moment, meaning there's not a huge amount of subtlety in those conversations. So with Rochester, yeah, now we could do a play version of it where he's just the worst person in the world, and I don't think that would serve the story. And that's not the story of Jane Eyre. That would then take away from Jane. It would paint Jane as this kind of submissive person who in the end just ends up buying back into a horrible man and toxic masculinity. So yeah, we got to find the subtlety, I guess, is what I'm saying. In those gorgeous eyes, and how I adore you so, Dorothy, you know, when I saw those dark eyes glow.
It's difficult, their relationship and this idea of loving your oppressor. But I think even in modern day relationships, we're all victims of the society that we live in. No matter what gender you are, you've been affected by what people have impressed upon you and what you've been taught. And I think she has to understand why Rochester has been put in that position in order to love him. So why he does the things that he does. But yeah, it's hard to switch off your 21st century brain and, yeah, love him.
I think actually the only way I'm able to see Rochester now is through the prism of toxic masculinity. I think he has been brought up in a world of immense privilege and brought up to expect a certain level of things. He is then, for want of a better word, screwed over by his brother and his father and forced into a marriage which he's not happy about, for lots of other reasons which reflect badly on him personally, but it remains that he was forced into something, and he is, I feel like it's the story of a person whose privilege is suddenly ripped away from them slightly, that their expectation of the world is skewed, and because their life experience is one of immense privilege and having everything their own way, that they can't come back from that. They see no way back from that, and he spends 15 years in the wilderness until someone can come along and slightly teach him that to be human isn't about having everything your own way, it's about being able to relate with other people from a position of equality, not from power.
You. It's your fault. You scared her away. You are not my wife.
I guess it's the speaking truth to power is what attracts Rochester to Jane, first of all. Like, I mean, she's unwilling to be subordinate. I think mainly she doesn't buy into the class system so much. The kind of proof is there's a moment where she rejects the jewels that he offers her. She's only in it. She only loves him for his personality, what they bring out in each other. She doesn't care about the trappings of wealth, and for someone in his position, I think that's very novel. So he only interacts with the elite of society. And you know, they don't talk honestly to each other because it's a battle for supremacy constantly among young, wealthy men. And the only women they meet are also brought up into that system where their only goal is to be married off. And anyone who isn't of that class is entirely irrelevant and will doff their cap and not say anything at all to them. So when Jane comes in and, you know, he drunkenly asks her if she thinks he's handsome, and she just says no. For us, it's funny. For the 19th century mind, it's shocking, I think. And it's those kind of moments, is that she won't sugarcoat anything for him. It's that she challenges him intellectually, which again is part of that toxic masculinity idea, that how novel it is for a man to be challenged intellectually by a woman. And it's painful, but I think part of the reason he loves Jane is because he doesn't have a very good view of women before that point.
When I saw those dark eyes glow.
So we've got this very classic piece, but we're looking at it through modern eyes, not with judgment, but just with added information and value. And we're having to help the audience, hopefully, see Jane Eyre, but also see the themes that are so central, that are, you know, about gender, identity, patriarchy, and hopefully we've kind of heightened them. I feel like we've shone a light more on them. We've looked at it through those themes as a catalyst, as opposed to it just being one singular feminist story. It's like, okay, but where is the woman of colour's voice? And also looking at a kinship, an unspoken kinship between the Jane Eyre, the English Jane Eyre, but also the Creole Bertha, looking at a love that was allowed to actually happen in that time that maybe we've never even considered. Was it a very volatile, unhealthy union between Bertha and Rochester? Yes, but it happened all the same in this world. And I think it's just something we don't see or allow ourselves to consider being real, even for me. As a black actress, I was like, how am I going to play this role? Does this exist? And then I was, you know, maybe concerned about how it would be perceived. But I just really hope that the audience appreciate and can see all the different layers that we've tried to put into our characters.
Though I am,
as we are,
as we are.
Though I am,
your net ensnares me.
Plain. Obscure.
I am not. How is he my master? Net ensnares me. How is he my master? If he struck me, how is he my master?
Jane Eyre.
Jane Eyre is playing at the Watermill Theatre until Friday the 2nd of November and will then be touring to schools and village halls. The sound design in this podcast was by Tim Knight and the singer was Ray Asher-Walton. To find out more about the Watermill and its productions, follow us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, or check out our website. This podcast was presented by me, Danielle Pearson, and produced and edited by Imogen Greenberg. We'll be back with more Watermill stories soon, so make sure you subscribe wherever you get this podcast from.